Baby, now you ready. Baby, now you ready.
Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. How you doing, Jesse?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Not a victory week, but a bye week, so hard to beat.
Yeah, we'll get into that right away. So, regular season finale, week 18. Yes, the playoffs are coming. The Packers aren't involved in wild card weekend, but we will preview wild card first. But I think the best place to start is actually with the regular season finale for the Packers. Losing to the Lions. Close game. It was 37-30. I'm trying to forget already the score because, you know, as much as the score obviously wanted to win, you'd like to have been 14-3 instead of 13-4. Ultimately, my mentality going into that game, especially for the latter half where Jordan Love was expected to play, was process over results. Always that. How does he look? And how does the team look? How are things going? And then, you know, so don't overreact to the results, both good and bad, but also be critical of like the actual play and content. I think that's kind of what I want to focus on more than anything. Good win by the Lions. I mean, they came to play clearly, and they didn't stop playing for 60 minutes, and I wouldn't say the Packers did either. But, you know, clearly not playing their starters, it puts them at a disadvantage. But at the same time, I mean, Jordan Love, he's a professional football player. Let's go and see what he can do, and let's get some of those, you know, Winfrey in. He got a lot of snaps there, so that was good to see. But yeah, any general thoughts about the Lions game? I've kind of given mine already, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of the same feeling. Listen, you know, David Bakhtiari was back out there. The first team offense when they were out there, I don't think they showed a lot. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers had, what, like 5 to 8 seconds on throws. So O-line did their part. It looked good, right? First drive, long drive. Packers drives over 5 minutes. They're number one in the NFL on scoring touchdowns, and they did. When was the last time we scored on an opening drive? It's been a long time. So everything you said, they came out healthy. Got some reps with some guys. Defense didn't show anything. Like, listen, they played very vanilla. Win your one-on-ones up front. Hey, hats off to the Lions because they didn't go belly up. Hey, and Dan Campbell is now the second longest reigning coach in the NFC North. So,
wonder how long that's going to last. But that's been talked about, right? Like the fact that, you know, since LaFleur's been hired now, you know, both this year, but all three teams have fired their head coach. I wonder if he's going to lap them and all teams will fire their coaches again before Matt LaFleur leaves Green Bay, but we'll see. I guess that may depend on a few things, including how Jordan Love plays, which I suppose is... there's two things I want to talk about. One is the offensive line, one is Jordan Love. Doesn't really matter. What do you want to start with, Jesse?
We can start with the offensive line. Let's focus on some positives right off the bat.
It really... You were mentioning the defense vanilla... But I still felt the Packers were kind of winning the battle in the trenches. And I think Goff kind of played better considering the amount of pressure he was under. What we've seen a lot from him lately. You know, he's always seemed like, especially with the Rams, if things are you know, the first read's open and like he can get the ball quick and he's really decisive with that when he's got the protection, everything's good. But what does he have to do when things aren't so clean? And I thought he actually navigated really well. We could maybe be more critical of the secondary play and the linebacker play. But I think the criticism of the defense, in my mind, and this is maybe setting my argument from last week of the Devondre Campbell for the MVP, this is what the defense looks like when he doesn't play. That's my whole argument, right? That he should be the team MVP. Because I thought they were just dreadful. Like, and again, you watched more of the Cleveland game than I did, but this seemed worse, right?
Well, yeah, again, a lot of it was, I think, you know, it was the real passive in the secondary. But yeah, you could tell with Campbell not being out there. Oren Burks, I don't know how he's still on an NFL roster because, wow, did he struggle? It makes a huge difference when you've got a really good guy in the middle that can kind of clean up a lot of the mess and take away a lot of that stuff over the middle. The biggest thing is just the really soft coverage and not really being competitive on the back end. A lot of it, I believe, is by design. Do you hate to see it? Yeah. But then you look at the week before where they played a lot more aggressive, so they can play better. They just didn't. So it was basically the same thing they saw against Cleveland, just really passive preseason-style football, I guess you want to say. So hopefully that's all out of their system.
So yeah, anyway, the actual talk about the O-line, really, because that is kind of the point of focus there. But like the whole argument again, Campbell not there. That's the story. To answer your question, how is Oren Burk still on a roster? It's the same roster that has Isaac Yiadom on it, so maybe that makes sense. That's the same team. But again, there were some guys hurt, so some players playing more snaps than what they are accustomed to and sitting a lot of starters, especially at the end. But for the offensive line, though, I mean, some of the starters played the entire game. David Bakhtiari, first game back in over a year, over a calendar year now, technically missed all of 2021. Calendar wise, because he did get injured, I believe, in December of 2020. So I gotta say, and I was listening to the Look Back podcast and Maddie Kroll, who she does a lot of really good offensive line analysis. She was kind of mentioning, you know, Bach, he's famous for the almost committing a false start every play because he gets off the like times the snap so perfectly and the quick get off, like it's almost mind boggling. Like you didn't really notice that. Like that didn't come off to me. And she mentioned like that wasn't there at all. So, but one thing I did like about Bach, though, was the lateral movement seemed like it was there. So when they were running screens or something, like he seemed like he had no limitations in his mobility. I don't know if he's same top end speed, but I think at this point, like just the ability to move around seemed like it was fairly fluid. I know he went to the blue tent and everyone was kind of making a big deal about it. That seemed more like, okay, first game action. He was probably mostly just going to check to make sure. Like, I don't even know if he was feeling any pain at all. Sure, he probably was, but that's also because you're playing football. I'm assuming everyone is feeling pain on the sideline. So with him, he's just extra cautious with that knee right now. I mean, just his salary alone, right? Like that knee, a huge investment there, protection wise. Because as much as Josh Neisman's been good, you don't want to have him play meaningful snaps in a playoff game at left tackle. Not when you can have Bakhtiari. So I thought that was good. I remember there was an early play where can't remember which it was a one-on-one snap, and you know Bach had a really good, you know, held his guy out pretty well, pushed him, and then there was a kind of like the defender made a really good second push, and Bach really held his ground, and like the way he's bending his knees, it's like, ooh, a little scary that he came back from that. It looked fine. It's okay. So he's clearly capable of taking the toll. Now it's just, can he do it over the course of a full game? But for my look, I'm pretty happy with what I saw from Bakhtiari. I don't necessarily expect it to be like all pro, clearly the best left tackle in the league. You might not get that this year, but I think what you get from him is going to be pretty solid. So feeling pretty confident with him at left tackle.
He was better than I thought. I thought it was going to be a little slower start for him and, you know, shake some rust off. And man, he's a technician. Larry McCarron kind of broke it down. And that dude, yeah, you didn't see that real quick kick step that he does, but his technical skills are still A+. I mean, his hand fighting and his, you know, setting his anchor and everything, he looked awesome. And he was really good in the run game, too. He got out there, got to the second level a few times and got dirty. I was impressed, you know, coming off of a year layoff. This is NFL football. This isn't a dude that missed a high school season and he's just the best guy out there. This is still the NFL. And yeah, it wasn't, you know, 100% Bach, but it was pretty impressive. And he got gassed. That was the biggest thing. He even said, you know, with the Packers and every other team, when you're practicing, they're not going full speed, full contact. You need those live NFL reps to ramp up. And I think he had 27 or 28 snaps. And he said, hey, I got tired. And when do you get hurt? When you get tired. So that was really smart that he came out. This first game, even he might not go the whole game, but if you can get a half to three quarters out of him, you know, and then get Yash, who comes in and just looks good. And it's a nice little reliever kind of thing, per se. I think we're in good shape right there. So it was really good to see him out there. He's still one of the best, even if he's not all pro level, he's still one of the best. And Aaron Rodgers trusts him and loves him out there, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, 41 to 27 snaps in favor of Neijman. So, like, you'd like to see at the very least the 60-40 go the other way, but probably closer to, you know, three quarters to one quarter type thing. 75% of the snaps for Bakhtiari, if anything. Again, hopefully it's whoever you're playing in the divisional round, you run them out, and then the fourth quarter is just easy going. You're up by three scores, and you can kind of maybe rest a guy like Bakhtiari if you need to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, bring in Dylan and grind it out. Yeah. So that's a lot on Yosh to be coming in too, because here's a guy coming off the bench. You know, you know, you're the backup. That's a hard thing to do, to come in, you know, and, you know, kind of just jump right in and do your thing. So hats off to him. Hats off to the whole staff doing it. And there's other guys that came back too, so we can jump right to center if you want.
Yeah, I guess just a quick comment though. I'll be honest, and we'll get to the previews later, there's maybe only one team the Packers could possibly play in the divisional round where my mentality going in isn't going to be heavy dose of Dylan. I think there's a lot of teams they're playing where that might be the key to getting through that divisional round is a heavy dose of Dylan. And the more shootout Rodgers has to put up 50 type game might come in the NFC Championship game. But again, looking too far ahead, because you're right, there's a lot of other offensive line to talk. Myers returned. He played most of the game as well, although I think it was in the fourth quarter. They took him out and then moved Patrick back to center. Patrick Taylor?
Yeah, Lucas Patrick.
Yeah, not Patrick Taylor. They had him running. He looked good too, though, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Meyer coming back. He's more of the road grader. He, you know, came back in, looked really good. Good to see him back. He's more of a people mover, right? You know, he might not have the savvy vet that you get with Lucas Patrick, but he's that grinder, bigger body kind of guy. Because the pass pro's been awesome all year, but you know, the ground game, we kind of struggled getting that push. So getting him back out there is huge. And hats off to Lucas Patrick too, where they slide him over to right guard to keep him in the lineup, because he's what they feel right now is one of our best five. And I agree. So that guy is just a tough, grinding, lunch pail football player, and I like that.
And I mean, really, Royce Newman beat out both Runyon and Patrick in training camp, right? Like let's say Bach was fully healthy, it probably would have been Jenkins at left guard and like Newman in the lineman and not Runyon and certainly not Lucas Patrick, it looked like. And suddenly, like, just through both of them playing so well, they've both cemented their spots. And Lucas Patrick was the right guard for the majority of last season and kind of looks like that's going to be his role again going into the playoffs. So kudos to him to kind of, you know, you had this job last year and you kind of lost it through training camp, but like you're saying, just lunch pail battled through all season and gained it back. So that I was curious to, okay, with Myers back in the lineup, just to see that Newman was the guy that came out, is it maybe hitting the rookie wall? Obviously, it's certainly his flash through his rookie season, and there's been ups and downs, but I think we as a whole like what we've seen from him. But yeah, it looks like his role is more future than now. He might still have to play at some point. We're hoping no more injuries, but that could always, it's a risk every time players step on the football field, so everyone needs to be ready. It's a nice guy to have as your like sixth offensive lineman. You know, depending on even like Billy Turner, we'll see what happens there. I mean, if Dennis Kelly has to play right tackle, that's pretty good too.
So I was kind of reading a few articles, and if you look at it, they said Dennis Kelly has probably been an upgrade to Billy Turner. Billy Turner's highs are probably better, but when Billy Turner does go in some lows too, where like, oh man, like that was just didn't work, where Dennis Kelly has been just steady as a rock, nothing exciting. You don't even hear his name called. Like, he just holds down that side. So we have two really good options over there. I believe Turner, that's still a spot if he gets back and he can be 100%, which I think he is back. He was on the COVID list and just came off. So I believe he's ready to practice and go full speed. But I don't have a problem with either one over there. We are pretty much as loaded as we can be outside of Elton Jenkins on our O-line, and we're deep. It's really good to have this time of year.
All right, so now to move on to the Jordan Love talk. I think there was some good and there was some bad. I think maybe, you know, the good wasn't so great and the bad wasn't like extremely awful, but it, you know, it was bad. That's about it. That's pretty ugly in terms of description. Sorry, folks. But do you want to say anything about Jordan Love?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to be pretty boring about this like you are. You know, like, I'm not one. The sky is not falling. Listen, people forget Aaron Rodgers first. Everybody remembers the Aaron Rodgers Cowboy game. He had two games where he played before that, and he was actually worse than Jordan Love. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. Yeah, there was some bad where everybody can point the finger and say, I told you so. This was a terrible pick. But there's also some things that, you know, the arm talent's there. You need some refining, but there's a few plays where it's like, oh, this kid has NFL talent. Now, I'm not going to crown him the next, you know, future Hall of Famer, but for a backup quarterback, basically a rookie season still, because last year, no offseason, I'll still wait to, you know, say what he really is long term.
His second career start. So, yeah, you're right. Like, overreacting in either direction is probably not good. You know, was it worth the first round pick? Maybe, you know, you still haven't seen the returns to say yes, but that doesn't mean it, you know, over the next 2 years through that rookie contract, he can't prove that. But I think the starting with the bad, it's just, you know, the inaccuracies. He was missing throws, and it was a lot of short stuff that seemed like it was pretty easy. There were times when there wasn't much noise in the pocket to kind of distract him or point to the reason why it happened. It just looked like he flat out was inaccurate with his throws. And it's shocking as a Packers fan, because we've seen maybe arguably the most accurate quarterback ever in history with Aaron Rodgers. So, like, the threshold of what we've used to seeing in Packers fans of how the perfect placement on balls is done is, like, that's a really wide margin to come down to Jordan Love. So especially in the same game, it looked awful optically. But, like, you know, in process over results, right, there was a throw to Juwan Winfrey that was completed for a first down, and it was put in a smart place. It was low and away from the defender. It made Winfrey go down and get a tough catch, which he did. So, you know, Winfrey may be someone that would like to see more of, and, you know, it's the classic case, right? Like, the backup, you know, the sixth guy in the depth chart wide receiver wise probably plays a lot with the quarterback in OTA, the backup quarterback in OTAs, and, like, always on the second string offense. So, like, they kind of have that connection. So, like, already kind of saw that with Love, you know, maybe through design or whatever, constantly going to Winfrey. So that was nice. But you also could have thought there was room to put that ball to the outside and, you know, not force Winfrey to make as difficult a catch. That still would have been a safe place to put it away from the defender, who was, like, really to the inside. But, like, it's still a case. So, you know, on that particular throw, you had a really great result getting the first down. Maybe not the best throw, but it also wasn't the worst. He didn't put that high where, you know, maybe a tip that leads to an interception. So I think the placement could be better, but it could also be worse. And that, I think that play perfectly exemplified what I tried to say, hopefully.
Yeah. No, it comes down to inconsistencies, right? You know, there's a flash where it's like, okay, this looks pretty good. And then it's like, oh my God, this guy looks like a rookie, which essentially he is. So it's just very inconsistent. You're right. We're spoiled as Packer fans. You know, the QB play we've had and, you know, the top tier accuracy. And then we see this, that there's a lot of franchises that's like, hey, this is what we've seen the last 20 years out of their quarterbacks. So, you know, we're more critical. I get it, you know, but you go around the league and you look at backup quarterbacks, there's a few that are okay. And everybody talks, oh, we should have a veteran. Well, who is out there as a backup that you can confidently be like, oh yeah, that guy can come in right now. It's the Aaron Rodgers show. And this kid's got a lot of growing to do. He made a nice pass to the end zone. I cannot remember the third string tight end's name off the top of my head right now.
Tyler Davis.
Yes. That was Tyler a beautiful Davis. Pass that should have been caught. That was, mm-hmm, a great touch pass over the coverage. And if he brings that down, that's a wow play right there. So, yeah, he didn't get a lot of help. Amari Rodgers, who I'm sorry, he shouldn't even be on the playoff roster. It's just, it's mentally for him right now, and he's struggling. That one interception, yes, it got tipped. It still hit him in the hands. You're a professional. Make that catch. So he didn't get any help from any of his teammates out there either. So I'm not being a Jordan Love, you know, backing him and everything, because there's a lot of work to do. But at the same time, give him another offseason and another preseason, and we'll talk about this down the road.
And you mean Tyler Davis, you're third string in this game. But if you look at overall, like, where he would have been, if you, like, the start of the year, like, how do you list the potential Packers tight ends? He's probably six or seven, right? Like, he's not even, like, DeGuara is the starter. And I mean, to be fair, he makes that screen pass to DeGuara, and DeGuara just takes to the house, right? Like, that's one where, you know, that was more that, like, that's where he got help from his teammate more than maybe he deserved on it. Like, it was a good throw. It was quick and decisive. But like you're saying, yeah, like, you know, if he had the first string receivers with him, maybe things are a little different in terms of his stats and his numbers. But yeah, quick and sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, yeah, I was agreeing with you. Go ahead.
Well, I made a quick and decisive call to try and cut in there. So that's kind of what the point is, though. Decisiveness was the one thing I saw from him that was maybe the best of all his qualities that he showed, especially against the blitz. Anytime the Lions blitzed him, he recognized it, or when he did recognize it, I think he did take a sack at one point, I believe, but the times he did recognize it, it was the ball was out quick and he knew exactly where to put it, like where his dump off option was. And there were plays where, like, you know, I think Patrick Taylor went and ran for close to a first down on one where he was facing the blitz, and it came right out to, like, he, you know, did what he's supposed to, right? He throws to where the blitz is coming from because there's no linebacker there. There's no, if it's a safety blitz, there's no defensive back in that zone. So I think the decisiveness was good. Like, even I think under the DeGuara touchdown, was that, I think that might have been against a blitz, and which is why there's one less player in the secondary to stop him. So I think that was really good because he didn't panic when they blitzed him. And I think that was a really good sign to where if you need to, he can start in the NFL. Doesn't mean you're going to win games or make a playoff run or anything, but like, he can at least be confident enough to start in the NFL, because frankly, we've seen worse quarterback play in the NFL this year. I mean, I like argue Jordan Love, even though he only played two games, is much better than what any Giants quarterback not named Daniel Jones showed this year. There's an awful play happening there, man. Not to just signal out the Giants because they're not the only team, but yeah. And then one quick thing about Amari Rodgers, and not to just blame the Packers, but we saw it in this game clearly, but I think even before this game it would have been clear. Would have been nice to reunite the St. Brown brothers and draft Amon-Ra in the third instead of let him fall to the fourth to the Lions. Again, the Packers aren't the only team. I'm sure Washington with Dyami Brown and the Panthers with Terrace Marshall, maybe even the Cardinals with Rondale Moore, are all kicking themselves saying they didn't take Amon-Ra St. Brown. So kudos to the Lions, because that seems like that's a great pick.
Right, yeah. He didn't test really good, and that's why I think, you know, a lot of teams soured on it. But you got to go back and look at tape, too, and that's a big thing, because that kid's a football player. He just finds ways to get open. He does not look like a rookie out there, I'll tell you that. He looks really good.
He looks better than his brother already, who's been in the NFL for 4 years. It's funny how it was the opposite, right? Like, Equanimeous tested so well, but yeah, it was the actual football playing not so good. And yeah, clearly younger brother has gotten the best of older brother already. Who knows where he's even in the NFL next year, frankly. I mean, he probably will be, but he's a free agent right now, really hasn't shown well through the entirety of his rookie contract. So if anything else, the Packers might just re-sign him because it'll be so cheap and they need bodies at wide receiver. But yeah, a bunch of teams missed on letting Amon-Ra St. Brown go to the fourth round. So again, kudos to the Lions.
Yeah, I agree 100%. A lot of talent right there.
It's playoff time, I think. Anyway, we can get to that in this episode, unless you had anything else to talk about the Lions game. I'm sure we want to move on from that, though.
Yeah, we can. Let's keep moving forward.
All right, so as we talked about in the previous episode, the Packers, number one seed in the NFC. Again, as good as you could have a regular season, outside of maybe going perfect, but we know that's not really realistic. It barely ever happens regular season-wise, and only has happened once where you actually win the title. And that's all that matters. And getting that first round bye is the first step to, you know, you essentially have won a playoff game already. You only have to win three, as opposed to everyone else in the NFC going into that playoff bracket needing to win four games. But just looking at those other teams, so you got the Packers at 13-4. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the 2 seed at 13-4. Then the other two division winners, Dallas Cowboys at 12-5, Los Angeles Rams at 12-5. The NFC West actually sending three teams, the Cardinals 11-6, the 49ers at 10-7, and then the Philadelphia Eagles rounding out the 7th seed at 9-8. So any just like quick general thoughts about this NFC playoff bracket, Jesse?
Not really. In a league of parity, I think it's really separated where you're really top heavy in the NFC, because you look at all the teams in the playoffs, maybe Philly with a few teams right there to get that last spot. But it was basically set going in. Those are the best teams by far. Then I think there's a big drop off. So previous to other years where it's like, oh, man, if that team got in, I think the best ones are in for sure.
The Saints at 9-8 were the next closest team record wise. And yeah, I don't think anyone would say that. Like, I mean, clearly the worst quarterback situation out of all those NFC teams. And I mean, their defense, you could maybe say their defense is maybe overall better than the Eagles, but there are certain parts. I know you talked about in your article this week that they're really good with that Eagles defense.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and quarterback play matters, right? And they're a mess right now in New Orleans. So they can play defense, but if you can't have any kind of quarterback play whatsoever, yeah, the Eagles are the better option right now. Well, I shouldn't say better option, but they're the better team to get in for sure.
Anyway, so the Eagles, as the lowest seed, will be taking on the 2 seed. And if they win, if they do beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are the 2 seed, they will play the Packers no matter what. And like, that's always the easiest. As the number one seed, the Packers will always get the lowest seed remaining in the playoffs. So if Philly wins, it's easy. If not, then it'll all be dependent kind of from there. But yeah, Buccaneers, Eagles, I would say to me, and I mean, I would say it's logically in both conferences, like mathematically, numerically, makes sense that the 2-7 matchup is the least likely to be close. But I think it's really the case. I think the 2 seeds in both conferences are just as much legit contenders as the 1 seeds. As much as we love our Packers, remember the NFC Championship game last year, who ultimately won the Super Bowl? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're the defending champs for a reason. So I'm pretty sure the Bucs are going to win this. But good on the Eagles. Good on Jalen Hurts, especially to get to the playoffs when kind of the deck was stacked against him. You know, the Eagles have the ammunition to move on from him. So I kind of feel like they won't now that they've made the playoffs with him. But I think this is kind of where their season ends.
Yeah, exactly. You know, listen, Philly's a team with nothing to lose. You know, everybody's counting them out. That's a team you don't want to play. That's a scary team right now. But you look at this matchup, Tampa Bay should. Now, this is why you play the game. But Tampa Bay is the superior team. They should beat them. Saying that, though, Philly does match up well. You know, they run the ball really good. They get pressure with 4 on defense. Darius Slay has played out of his mind this year. Nice little bounce back for him. I shouldn't say it's a bad matchup for the Bucs, but it's a team where it's like, hey, they're scrappy, right? So Tampa Bay should win this game, but yeah, again, crazier things have happened.
I know the Bucs aren't necessarily fully healthy, but I'll maybe push back and disagree a little bit. I like what you're saying about, like, you know, their front four, especially defensively, they can get pressure, and those, like, that's what you need to beat Brady, right? You can't blitz him. He'll always beat you when you blitz him. You need to be able to pressure with 4 and have that extra player out either covering. But I think offensively, though, they don't necessarily match up well against the Bucs. Like, that is a run defense that has been maybe the best, or not even maybe, like, I almost inarguably the best over the last 3 years. Talk about Matt LaFleur's tenure. We look kind of this 3-year period with the Packers in that time. The Bucs defense is kind of like run defense, especially, really unparalleled. And that's the Eagles' strength, is running the football. So it all comes down to me to Jalen Hurts' arm. Mm-hmm. Maybe he could do that, but I don't know that he's going to out-duel Tom Brady. I guess that's kind of my thinking there.
No, exactly. You know, and the X factor is, you know, he can move the pocket a little bit and maybe get some running out of that, but you're not just going to line up and run right into the teeth of that defense for sure. So, yeah, it depends if they can get turnovers, but yeah, Bucks should win this game.
Now, the 3 seed versus 6 seed will be the Cowboys hosting the 49ers. What do you think about this matchup, Jesse?
I think this is the toughest one that can go any way. San Francisco's hot right now. They're tough. They stopped the run. I'm not saying I'm expecting, but I think 49ers win this football game. I really do.
We're lockstep there. I actually think that the case too. Maybe that's part of the pessimism, because what'll happen is, especially if what we expect comes true, where the Buccaneers do get through the Eagles and the 49ers make the upset on the Cowboys, it will be Green Bay, San Francisco in the divisional round.
Mm-hmm. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I just think the 49ers right now are a tough out for everybody. I had them rated number 2 in my article behind the Bucs as the toughest team for Green Bay. They can play in the cold. I just think matchup wise, you know, they're tough. They play defense. The cold is not going to bother them. And they run the football. You know, this is not the same 2019 49ers, but they're going to try to do that again, right? They're going to the zone running game. And now with Debo being that X factor, I mean, he's playing just out of his mind right now and being that chess piece moving all over the place. That's a bad matchup. It just really is. You know, and then I look at Dallas. Yeah, that roster's loaded. Don't get me wrong, but they live on turnovers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't turn the ball over. You know, they got some really good receivers that aren't really playing as good as they were earlier. Well, we get Ja back, and the way we can play defense, we can score with them. I really do. You know, and their defense is good. Don't get me wrong. They don't scare me like the 49ers, I guess. That 49er front four is way scarier to me. And that's not taking nothing away from Dallas, because they got some young players that are really good, but they're not the Niners front in my book.
So, yeah, so that article that we keep referencing, Jesse wrote this week, the Packers, ranking the Packers' potential playoff opponents, specifically in the NFC, kind of just like the degree of difficulty it would be for the Packers to defeat them, or how likely those teams would be to beat the Packers. And again, all happening in Green Bay, which is the advantage of being the number 1 seed. But I pretty much agreed with your order almost entirely, to be honest. Yeah, having even though they're the 6th seed in the NFC, having the 49ers second on that list. And one of the things, it's similar to the Eagles, right? The NFC East teams kind of almost like they both kind of got bad luck matchups here for their own skill sets. I think the days of this team running through Zeke are gone. Like to me, this is Dak Prescott's team. Like this team's going to win and or lose by his arm. And unfortunately for him, like the 49ers, that passing defense, especially near like goal line wise and in near the red zone, much better pass defense than run defense. So maybe, you know, Mike McCarthy, right? Maybe he does end up relying on Ezekiel Elliott a lot. And I'm normally not the guy that says rely on the run game. You've got a talented quarterback like Dak Prescott, like let him be the one to throw it, right? But this might be a game where it might almost advantage the Cowboys to really rely on Zeke. And like you mentioned, that pass rush is just deadly, right? So run more to get away from that pass rush. And that's kind of what my thinking of, you know, if the Packers do end up playing the 49ers in the divisional round, a heavy A.J. Dillon game to me seems like a really good strategy there to get away from that pass rush a little bit.
Right. Yeah, just saw a stat earlier today where the Niners against the run are top three in the league, DVOA. Then against the pass, 15 yards and under, they're top, I think, 10. And then passes over 15 yards, they're one of the worst in the league. So if you can go downfield, try to spread them out, I guess. But, yeah, you still got to be able to run the football with some kind of efficiency. And I agree with you. I don't think Zeke is the same guy as he was, and that's running backs, right? It's a tough position. So I think Dallas will have to get creative, use Pollard some. But yeah, it's just they're just a tough out. San Francisco is a tough out in my book.
And then the 4-5 matchup in the NFC, actually a pair of NFC West teams, the Los Angeles Rams hosting the Arizona Cardinals. So any thoughts here, Jesse?
Arizona, I had them as the least scary team, I guess I would say, in my article. They've been really struggling. They lost four of their last five. Good quarterback. They got some weapons. They don't scare me. They are not built for outdoors, cold weather. I think if they had to come to Green Bay throttles them. Rams, really good team again. I think they're better than Arizona. But again, them coming to Green Bay, I like our chances. These are the two teams where I really like our chances just because of the matchup wise.
Which is, again, assuming the Bucs win, really hoping the Cowboys win their game, because that puts the divisional round would be whoever wins this game then for the Packers in terms of their opponents. So we're Cowboys fans for this week, I guess, Jesse.
Right, yeah. And when you look at this game too, that's going to be a short week for both of them playing that Monday night game. So first time for the playoffs for that. That's an extra day, which I'm sure it'll be a Sunday if they win, just because you don't want to give them 5 days, but who knows. But one of these teams would be the preferred ones for me for sure.
In terms of how they match up, I actually think it's funny. I think that the Rams actually defense very similar to me to the 49ers. Really good pass defense, but more vulnerable against the run. Like, I mean, you think of Aaron Donald. Like, we always talk about what he can do. Like, he could wreck quarterback game plans as a defensive tackle. But the key to beating Aaron Donald is actually to run at him. To go straight at him. Don't let him have the forward momentum coming at you. Right, is to push him back with your offensive line. So yeah, maybe the Cardinals aren't built to win in Green Bay, but in a sense, their offense is kind of built to take on this Rams defense, which I think will be good. And I mean, Kyler Murray versus Matt Stafford, both making their first career playoff games, is a really interesting story for me. I love that, you know, there's two division games, actually, one in each conference on Wild Card Weekend. And to me, like, those might be the two games where I'm like, my eyes are most peeled. Like, I'm going to watch all of them, obviously, because I'm just so addicted to football. But yeah, I'm going to, like, those are probably the two I'm the most excited about. Rams Cardinal, certainly on that Monday night, once everything else is decided, the last wild card game will be fun to watch there.
Right. Yeah. You know, division foes, third time around, anything can happen, right? So it'll be interesting. Maybe the best teams, I guess, win.
Yeah, so looking at that again, the whole conference, the Packers, I mean, you know, it'll be basically like the last two in the NFC will be in the championship game, but in terms of divisional round, we know that the Packers won't play the Bucs or the Cowboys, no matter what. If the Packers do play either of those teams, it will be in the NFC championship game. So they could play the Rams, Cardinals, 49ers, Eagles. Basically, there is a scenario where you could play outside of the Eagles, but the other three teams, Rams, Cardinals, 49ers, there is technically scenarios where that could actually be the NFC championship game. part that requires the Bucks to lose, though. So I don't think I don't know that that's happening necessarily. Again, that's to me the one in the NFC that seems like it's the most lopsided. And again, I kind of feel like you shift over to the AFC, it's the same thing again. That 2-7 game is kind of that same feel to me. So I don't know if there's anything you wanted to touch on again in this NFC side, or do we head over to the other side of the bracket now?
No, let's head on over. Let's go right into that Chief Steeler game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I think that the Steelers, again, the same, like they're a victim of a little bit of the same thing that the Cowboys and the Eagles are. I think Najee Harris is sort of the offensive identity to kind of, that's like the difference maker. I don't think it's going to be Ben's arm as much as like Deontay Johnson's a great receiver and you love the athletic talent of like Claypool and the tight end Pat Freiermuth, but like it really runs both literally and figuratively through Najee Harris. And the Chiefs' run defense seems to, especially in the red zone, tightening up and not allowing touchdowns. Like they're inside the five, they've allowed the second fewest amount of touchdowns, like touchdown rate, sorry, 33% touchdown rate on run plays inside the five. It does go up against pass plays, so maybe that's a bit of their weakness. But you know, when it comes down to those grinding Najee Harris getting in, it'll be difficult against the Chiefs. And also, playing against Patrick Mahomes, doesn't matter what your defense is, that'll always be really difficult. So I think the Chiefs got this maybe even more so than the Bucks over the Eagles, but it's that same type of feel.
Yeah, this is the biggest lopsided one for me. I just don't see the Steelers keeping up with the Chiefs. TJ Watt didn't play when they played earlier this year. Really great player. He's awesome. It's not going to be enough. Barring injury or something to Mahomes, I think the Chiefs run away with this one.
The implied total is Steelers 17 last time I checked. I think it was like a 12.5 point favorite. It's like I think the Chiefs I would guess the Chiefs would cover that 12.5 point spread. And I'm not sure that the Steelers are going to get to 17 points. I mean, what do they do against the Ravens, right? Didn't they just put up 13 in overtime or 16 in overtime? Yeah, 16 in OT. I don't know. I don't see it. So yeah, don't have to spend much time on this game, but because I think there's some really like two other very intriguing matchups in the AFC. So great playoff times. And what a wonderful week to just watch football stress free. Like fantasy's done, and you might do some playoff challenges stuff like that, but your fantasy leagues are all done. And as Packers fans, you can just relax and not have to worry about anything. It's awesome.
My kind of week. Good week. Great football. Six really good games.
Yeah. So speaking of six, so my predictions, two upsets in terms of the lower seed beating the higher seed, both of them, the six seed beating the three seed. I already mentioned it earlier. 49ers beating the Cowboys. I think the Patriots are going to upset the Bills in this second division game. Just kind of mentioned like with the Rams and Cardinals, AFC East battle here. And while the Bills do have won the division, you know, these two teams split their matchups against each other this year. So third time's the charm. And I think the Patriots can have this. And I think I've heard people talk about this before, right? Like, and maybe more from a fantasy context, but like, if you could tell me one stat line, I could tell you how the game went or try and predict the game. And, you know, maybe it's really difficult to do in some circumstances, but I've got one here for the Bills. If you tell me Josh Allen's rushing stat line, I think I might be able to tell if they win or lose, because I think that'll be the key for the Patriots. I mentioned that the Chiefs run defense and their excellence all year, only allowing 33% touchdowns on runs inside the five. That's the second best in the league. The Patriots are the best at 20%. Like not like, like no one's even close to them. I mentioned like the Bucks and their run defense excellence. Statistically, it looks like what the Bucks were the last 2 years, right? Where like statistically, DVOA wise, and like a lot of those metrics, they're just so far ahead. Like just purely from the goal line perspective and stopping the short yardage run defense, the Patriots are so much better than everyone else. And I think that'll be where the Bills really struggle. I don't think, you know, like last week against the Jets, relying on Devin Singletary kind of rushing in. I mean, Singletary, I think, has what, 5 touchdowns over the last 3 weeks? And that's not something that their offense necessarily used to. They've been able to do it against the opponents they've had. I don't think that's going to be the case against the Patriots. So I think Singletary will struggle, and then it'll all come down to Josh Allen. Can the Patriots stop him from running it in? Because you can have the perfect defense, and then, you know, his just freak athleticism. He's like, you know, when he runs, he kind of, to me, looks like a faster Cam Newton. I don't know if you get that same thought with Josh Allen.
Yeah, I think Josh Allen, yeah, all around is, yeah, better arm, everything. But yeah, big guy like Cam Newton, but I think a little quicker. Used different, obviously.
I think if the Patriots can keep him out of the end zone, if they can like account for him somehow and force him to beat them with his arm, I know he's got good weapons and he's got the strong arm for it, but I think as the Patriots, you'd rather him be facing your secondary than taking on your front seven, where he can kind of like outrun everyone and at times like physically outbully them too.
Right. Yeah. I think it's going to be a low scoring game. It's going to be, yeah, the Patriots got a really good defense, right? That's what's going to keep them in this game. Cause I think Mac Jones, like some of the other rookies, kind of hit a wall and has been struggling a little bit of late. I got the Bills in this one. I think it's going to be a really close game. It can go either way. Again, a division game. That first game, I don't see the Patriots running the ball, you know, 2,000 times like they did in that first one. But yeah, it's another tough matchup. A really good defense, like in Bill Belichick, the Wizard. He's going to try to take away Josh Allen moving the pocket and moving around a lot. So they're going to force him to try and run. Like you said, they're going to be able to stop the run. The Bills running backs to me aren't super, you know, impressive. They're kind of just guys. It's going to come down to down and distance and Josh Allen having to use his arm and basically have to take that next step, you know, where we talk about him, where he's on the brink of, you know, those quarterbacks that get to those next tiers. This is a big game for him. I got the Bills in a close one.
And I think the one thing kind of leaning towards the Bills is this will be Mac Jones' first playoff game, right? Like big pressure through the season and, you know, success to get his team to the playoffs, but ultimately he hasn't played a playoff game yet. And maybe similar to what we're saying about Jalen Hurts with the Eagles, right? His first playoff start. And then, I mean, we talked about, right? Like the big storyline involving the Rams Cardinals, aside from, you know, division foes, both quarterbacks making their first career starts between Matt Stafford and Kyler Murray. Funny that the 4-5 matchup in the AFC is the same thing. Joe Burrow and Derek Carr, both of them making their first career NFL starts. And it's like almost parallels, right? Like with Burrow and Murray, okay, they're young in their careers. They've gotten here in their rookie contracts with Stafford and Carr. Well, I guess Stafford's not his first playoff start. He's looking for his first playoff win, I should say. I misspoke there. Sorry. I forget Stafford. It's funny. The Lions actually did make the playoffs at times, Jesse, right? Like, remember when we were young before the Matt Patricia years, but yeah, I think like all these guys looking for their first career playoff wins, but particularly Burrow and Carr, like both going up against each other in their first playoff games. That'll be a really interesting matchup. Could be one of the tightest games, I think.
I'm on the Bengals, bandwagon, man. That team is just, I think there's something that could be potentially special with them. Now, I don't think they're world beaters, but they got the pieces, man. They're going to be a tough out. They might be my team in the AFC. I think they're going to beat up on the Raiders. I really do. Joe Burrow has just got ice in his veins. The dude's awesome. That defense is where, you know, when they're playing really good, they stop teams and then you can have some breakdowns. But I'm on the Cincy bandwagon, man. I think they run away with this one.
I will say about the Bengals, unlike some other teams, I think they match up well against their defensive matchup, because I think the strength of this Raiders defense is the run defense and that front. They could still like impact the pass game. And they, you know, Max Crosby, especially as an edge rusher, they've got that pass rush, but where teams really struggle is trying to run against them. So that secondary is very beatable for the Raiders. And that's kind of where you want to target. So this is kind of one of those games where, winning or losing, the Bengals will probably throw it 45, 50 times either way. And I think this is one where, especially when it's like defensive matchup, it's to your advantage. I say do it when it's neutral anyway, but when it's certainly to that, and it's like the Bengals have kind of shown they're willing to throw in neutral game scripts anyway. They feel like that's the strength of their team. They do match up really well, and I think they will win. And yeah, you're right. They might be able to make some noise in this playoff run. I guess if I'm correct that the Patriots win, the Bengals would then go up against the Chiefs, again, assuming they beat the Steelers. If you're right, though, and the Bills actually get that victory, then I guess the Bengals would go up against the Titans. So either way, key AFC matchups coming because the Titans got the number one seed, and I guess that's kind of where we'll end the transition, because to me, Coach of the Year kind of feels like it's going to be either the number one seeds, which to me, I think is pretty deserving between Matt LaFleur and Mike Vrabel. I think there's strong arguments to be made on either side. You probably have the stronger case of the, like, you know, I like Ryan Tannehill, but clearly he's not as good a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers. And just the, you know, all the key injuries that they've suffered, Packers have as well. You know, haven't lost Devontae Adams though for long stretches, like the Titans have lost both AJ Brown and Derrick Henry, which you can kind of say either one is their Devontae Adams in terms of the, like their key offensive weapon. So I get the argument for Vrabel, but you know what LaFleur has done through 3 years. Not to say that those years should impact this, because you know the award is just a 1 year award. But I wonder if the writers put a bit of a legacy in there, like yeah, 3 straight 13-win seasons. Maybe we'll give it to him there, because you know as good as Aaron Rodgers has been, he's never had 3 straight 13-win seasons ever in his career. So coincidence that it happens the first 3 years with Matt LaFleur? I think not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's a 1 year reward award, not reward award, but you still, that's in the back of your mind, right? Like this is a winningest coach in his first 3 seasons. But yeah, Vrabel too, both are deserving, but what Vrabel's done also with that offense totally changed when he lost Henry. And they still got it done, played good. Both are deserving. I can't argue either way if the other wins. Of course, we want to see our hometown Matt LaFleur win. But yeah, Vrabel's an awesome coach. His players love him, kind of like Matt here. So both are awesome, awesome choices.
And watch the NFL writers give it to Cliff Kingsbury, just because all the Cardinals made the playoffs. Just because they seem to never get the Coach of the Year award right. Or, I mean, they do sometimes, but they're also, they've been egregiously wrong at other times. Jason Garrett.
Right.
Matt Nagy won it in 2018. Like they've just completely missed and whiffed on some of the coaches they've named for Coach of the Year.
Right.
anything else you want to talk about in this episode, Jesse? I think we've kind of done well to A, recap that Lions game, but B, kind of look through this wild card weekend and kind of give our thoughts, predictions on how the games will go. And again, looking forward to what the Packers might or and could or should expect in the divisional round.
No, I think we covered everything. Yeah, just enjoy this week of sitting back and watching hopefully everybody else beat on each other. And whoever wants to come on into Lambeau, bring it on.
Yeah, again, regular season finale for the Packers was against the Lions, but the regular season finale in general for the NFL was the Raiders-Chargers game. But I think that's what you love about the final week of the regular season, because there are certain scenarios that might be win and get in. I remember, it's funny, it seems like it's always, even though it was for a wild card spot and it wouldn't have mattered if it's divisional opponent or not, it seems like, I mean, they always have any of the season with divisional games anyway, so it's not a coincidence. But I remember the Titans and Colts had it 1 year where it was literally a win and get in final game of the regular season. So I guess for them it could have been tie and get in too, so that there's always that the kind of complicated thing in the back of everyone's mind. But I guess this isn't a Chargers or Raiders pod, but I do have a rant about that, about a few things in a few different directions too. I'm going all directional ranting here, because there's a lot of, you know, maybe an argument on both sides where there's some flaws happening. But I don't know, Jesse, do you have any thoughts about that Chargers Raiders game?
I'll let you open it up, but I want to say, first of all, before you rant, that was a heck of a game to watch. I'm happy my team wasn't in it, but that was a fun football game to watch, and I'll let you go. Unleash.
Well, and I feel sorry for Steelers fans, because they had so much on the line. I mean, ultimately, they've gotten the playoffs, but, like, you know, not even the two teams involved, but, like, the Steelers were the team that, like, they had the most on the line. They had nothing, could do nothing in the game, so would have felt so awful for those fans. But for the 29 other fan bases, yeah, that was a great game to watch.
Sure was.
Yeah, they kept focusing. There's a few Steelers fans in the crowd, and those poor suckers got so much airtime, and mostly it was just the camera crew exploiting their misery and pain and suffering at the, oh God, they could tie. But yeah, that's I guess what you get. That's what happens when you go to live sporting events. They'll use that against you.
Yeah, there was a lot of emotions running in that game. Like I said, I'm happy Green Bay had nothing to do with it, because that would have made my blood pressure go through the roof.
So a lot of people are criticizing Brandon Staley for the timeout at the end. And, you know, like the thought that the Raiders might have not kicked the field goal to win the game, which I know they're saying that, but I still don't really believe that's the case. I think that's maybe the Raiders just rubbing salt in their division opponent's wounds, and they're just trying to mess with them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm taking two tinfoil hat there. But like, I kind of get the sense the Raiders were just going to try and run it out to the end, call a timeout with 3 seconds left and just kick it. If we made it, cool, we won the game. If you missed it, oh, we tied and we're still in the playoffs, right? Like, I kind of felt that. So I don't, like, everyone's criticizing Staley for the timeout. I don't think that's where the criticism is. Because I know that the thought was, okay, you took the timeout because you wanted to make it a defensive adjustment and you still allowed a first down run, which makes me wonder, if he didn't call a timeout, would Josh Jacobs have just run into the end zone and scored a touchdown and ended it right there?
Yeah, right. Well, first thing I said to a friend of mine, like, why don't they just kneel it down? I said, okay, as a Packer fan, would you do that to get the Bears or Vikings into the playoffs? The answer is heck no. They can say what they want. They were going to kick that field goal. What's the worst thing that happens? You miss it and you tie? I mean, I don't buy that crap, and you're not going to be able to sell it to me. So I'll leave that right there.
Especially for teams going into the playoffs, if you can win a game, you want to win a game, right? Like, I don't know. And I know people were talking about it before the game too. Oh, do both coaches agree to kneel down? The reason it would never happen in a million years is because as a coach, you wouldn't trust the other coach to follow through with it, frankly. Like, I don't know if they did agree with it, but like, I don't know. And like, even there, right? Like, even if it's true that they were planning to just kneel down and go with the tie and not kick the field goal, and the timeout made them change their mind, that's still the Raiders deciding to change their mind and go for it, right? So, like, they were always liable to just on a whimsical thing, like, oh, the other coach called the timeout. Like, I don't know if that offended them for some reason, and they, like, I just, it, the whole thing just doesn't, I don't buy it. You're playing football, you're in the playoffs, you want to have a winning culture, try and win games, especially for coach, I always forget, I can't remember how to pronounce his name, Rich Belsilia.
Yeah, close enough.
I mean, he's the interim head coach, right? He's trying to win games to have a job. And, you know, I think making the playoffs probably helps his case to maybe remove that interim tag, and he is the actual head coach of the Raiders, non-interim. But you got to think, like, again, he wants to win as many games as possible to make that happen for his own needs. And I'm sure the team wants to think that too, going into the playoffs. If you want to put any fault on the Chargers, it's exactly what we're saying. It's the run defense. Like, you can't allow Josh Jacobs to make that first down run. And frankly, like, I think their goal line defense is pretty good. I think the Raiders did get one touchdown, but they also had, like, I counted 5 red zone carries inside the 5, and they only got one touchdown out of it the whole game. That's pretty good there. But the just overall run defense, there was constantly getting first down runs from Josh Jacobs, like, across the field multiple times. And so if you just had better run defense, you probably win that game. But if you're going to criticize Brandon Staley for anything and the coaching staff for anything, it's the going for it on 4th and 1 from your own 18-yard line. And I know the analytics, they're heavy into it. It's okay, like, you know, going for it on 4th down, you know, better chance of getting longer drives and better chance of scoring. But frankly, a first down gained at your own 19-yard line, I don't see how that drastically increases the chances of scoring. Because you could have made that first down, not gone 3 and out after that and punted anyway. And then instead, that's a pretty realistic, I think, outcome. And yes, the obviously high-end outcome is they get that first down, they get the momentum, they get down, and they score a touchdown. But, like, the worst-case scenario actually didn't even happen, because it's the Raiders get the ball in great field position and they get a touchdown. Your defense actually stepped up there, and after the turnover, you know, forced a field goal. But frankly, going for it there, I don't really see, like, if your analytics are telling you that it's that drastic of a change, I don't think you're incorporating the position field where you are enough. Because to me, that going for it there didn't necessarily increase the odds that much of getting a score. And in fact, you just gave 3 points to the other team. But that being said, if you are going to go for it there, again, against this Raiders defense, where the strength is the middle, the right in the trenches, that defensive line, you're going to try and run it up the gut with your running back, who I like, Austin Ekeler, and he's a pretty good, like, short yardage back, but his best skill set to the game is his ability in space as a pass catcher, his quick ability to catch and turn. Easy could have got, like, if you wanted to give him the ball, find a way to get him in space and not run him up the gut. I don't understand how Justin Herbert doesn't roll out either direction. You have a route that's there. If they cover it, it probably means Herbert can run the 1 yard himself. So the decision to go for it on 4th is atrocious, but the play call offensively, I think, is even worse.
I agree 100%. You know, analytics are great until you're on the wrong side of it. And nobody looks at that factor. You can put in those numbers and everything. You got to look at field position and how the game's flowing too. So yeah, I agree with that. And what I agree more with is the play call. It's like, come on, dude, use your young quarterback to their strengths, and you're, you know, don't want to really call him a scat bat because he did lead the league in touchdowns this year now. But yeah, get Eckler in space a little bit, and you got to go a yard. I mean, Herbert's a big, strong quarterback. He can fall forward for a yard, or you can just do that dump off. So, yeah, if that's where the mistake was, that was the mistake. You know, Matt LaFleur made mistakes as a young coach. It's a first-year head coach. The timeout, I'm not even worried about that. That's where the problem was right there, and that was the game, essentially.
Yeah, 3 point. They don't score those 3 points. It probably doesn't even go to overtime. And Austin Eckler scored 8 receiving touchdowns. So yes, the touchdowns are there, but again, it's 12 rushing, 8 receiving. So just as like almost just as much contribution. And again, that's on 70 receptions as opposed to 206 carries. So like that's his best skill set as an individual player. Your team's identity is through this quarterback with Herbert, and the best way to attack the Raiders is against the defense. That play call made no sense in any way whatsoever.
I agree, 100%.
Not to like signal down, it's a whole game, but that play call probably cost the Chargers the playoffs, and that sucks because that's how Chargers fans are used to it, right? So close, and it's so far away. So yeah, sorry, Chargers fans.
Yep, that's just... that's how it goes. They'll be waiting until next year, and it's going to burn for a while.
Well, we'll be back next week. We'll specifically talk about the Packers matchup. Love to say that, knowing that they'll get into the divisional round automatically. Again, the first round bye. I don't know if I've mentioned that enough, but they got it this year. But yes, we'll find out who that divisional opponent is through these wild card weekend games. But of course, you can follow us along every step of the way on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. You can also follow your co-host individually. Jesse's at @Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores. You can get Jesse's article we were talking about earlier, as well as all of the Full Press Coverage articles, all the Full Press Coverage podcasts, access the Full Press Radio Network. And again, that's all for free on the Full Press Coverage app, so download today. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_IIOfficial. He lets us use the song Not You as our intro and outro music, so thank you for that, PA. Thank you, Jesse, again for joining me. Any final thoughts for the listeners?
Yeah, enjoy this week, and we'll be back at football at Lambeau next week. Go Pack Go!
Yes, we don't actually have to say that this week. Go Pack Go! We can if we want to. But yes, definitely, we'll say it now and bank up that good juju for 2 weeks from now when the divisional round does happen for the Packers. And of course, next time, we'll be here to preview that on the Full Press Packers Pod.